If you would be turning to Romans chapter 12, today we're going to be talking some more about love. There was a survey of 4 to 8-year-olds, and it was asking them to share their views on love. And here's what some of them said. Love is when you go out to eat and give somebody most of your French fries without making them give you any of theirs. Love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on shaving cologne and they go out and smell each other. Love is when my mommy makes coffee for my daddy and she takes a sip before giving it to him to make sure the taste is okay. Love is when you tell a guy you like his shirt, then he wears it every day. Love is when mommy sees daddy smelly and sweaty and still says he is handsomer than Robert Redbird. I know my older sister loves me because she gives me all her old clothes and has to go out and buy new ones. Love is like a little old woman and a little old man who are still friends even after they know each other so well. Love is when your puppy licks your face even after you left him alone all day. Now, Paul began chapter 12 with that well-known verse telling us to present our bodies as a living sacrifice. And then he went on to talk about how we are to use the spiritual gifts that God has given to us. And after that, he brought up the subject of love in verses 9 through 21. The section I want us to start looking at today. You see, in the exercise of our spiritual gifts, one of the most important things that we can do is show agape. And that's the word used here. Now, again, many people, they think of love as a feeling or an emotion, maybe, romantic love, or their favorite food comes to mind, but that's not agape. Agape is not a feeling, but a choice, and that's why we can be commanded to love in the Bible. Agape is that unconditional love that seeks the other's highest good, whether they deserve it or not. And it is a badge of discipleship. John 13, 35. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Now, 1 Corinthians 13. That's more commonly known for what it says about love. And you'll find it read at weddings, you find it framed up on people's walls. But this passage in Romans, it's just as important in what it has to say about love. And some people, they like to refer to 1 Corinthians 13 as the anatomy of love and call this passage in Romans the challenge of love. It's been said that when you're reading the Bible and you come across a passage like these, with a bunch of bullet points, if you will, that you shouldn't just fly over them. It's kind of like being in a helicopter or an airplane and looking down and saying, well, isn't that an impressive grove of fruit trees? But what you really ought to do is land the plane and walk among the trees and take some time to examine them, to sample their fruit. And in other words, we really think about and meditate on the different points and how we can apply them and not just rush through them. Looking at this passage, what I think Paul did here was start with a certain level of love and then progress to more difficult levels. And you'd probably agree that it's easier to love the brethren, to show love to the brethren, than it is to show love to the world and, especially to your enemies. And love them. And so each section of our text, it gets progressively more difficult as he raised the bar in the challenge of love. Verse 9, that seems to be the introduction. I believe it's the umbrella. Okay, everything that he had to say about love, it falls under the umbrella of this verse. Let love be without hypocrisy, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Okay, so without hypocrisy. When we hear that word hypocrisy, we often think of someone, they say one thing, they do another, and that's certainly a type of hypocrisy. The word originated in the Greek language as a theatrical term. The Greek word hypokrites, It was used for stage actors. And the Greek and the Roman actors would often wear a mask to hide their true identity. Now, we like actors on TV, and we like them in movies and in plays, and the more believable they are, the better. But I don't know anybody who likes them in real life. I had a friend who grew up in a missionary family, and it was in South America. And he said that his mom would sometimes get these things that were breaded and shaped like fish. The thing is, they were actually made of chicken. And so she called them hypocrites. We're having hypocrites for dinner tonight. That's pretty good. Agape doesn't pretend to be something it is not. It doesn't wear a mask. It's sincere and genuine, without pretense, without ulterior motives. What you see is what you get. This is a pure love. There is such a thing as a selfish love, where you have an angle to get more out of it than you give. And you remember Ananias and Sapphira, Acts chapter 5. Barnabas just sold a piece of land, and he gave the money to the church, and it was to be, of course, for the needs of the saints. Well, they saw Barnabas. They saw him being honored. They saw him getting all these kudos, and hey, they wanted some of that. The problem was they wanted to get the credit for doing that without actually doing it. Okay, at least not all the way. They lied about it. It looked like great love, but it wasn't motivated out of love. It was hypocrisy. But as you know, Peter said they weren't lying to men, they were lying to God. That was the worst of it. So God made an example. He made an example of them for future generations, I think, to get our attention. Now, looking through the Gospels, you find that the strongest rebukes from Jesus were against hypocrites. And this surprises some people. Because the sin that Christ attacked most harshly was not adultery, lying, stealing, or anything else. It was hypocrisy. Jesus had extremely, extremely harsh words for those who were wearing a false face, pretending to be something they were not. And you may have experienced this before, where someone, man, they treat you great. They act like they really love you, but as soon as you turn your back, they put a knife in it, figuratively speaking. It's been said artificial love is the worst counterfeit of them all. Well, the second part is abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. To truly have agape, this must be the case. So one of the first things about biblical love is you need to abhor or hate, as the NIV puts it. That's certainly not something that people in our culture would think. In order to love, you got to hate. And it's not just say it's bad, but have a gut reaction. One Greek lexicon says of this particular word, to have a vehement dislike for something. Another one says that it even denotes to shudder. We are to abhor what God says is evil. Sometimes we're tempted to either excuse or ignore what the Bible says about it. Oh, I know that it's technically wrong, but it's just one of those, you know, those little guilty pleasures. And we start making excuses for it. Sin is a big deal. It's what sent Jesus to the cross. Did Jesus go to the cross for things that are technically wrong? We are to hate what God hates and love what God loves. Because as you know, love comes from God. It originates with Him. And so love finds no pleasure in anything that is wrong or against God. If God stands against it, love stands against it. On the flip side, we are to cling to what is good. Not just like it, but grab hold, hang on. And this is a word that is sometimes used of marriage. You might say that love is wedded to what is good. Now, if you truly, you truly abhor what is evil and cling to what is good in God's eyes, right? Not in the eyes of the popular media. If you do this, you will sometimes be accused of, now brace yourself, I'm going to say the word from the pulpit, a fundamentalist, the F word, okay? Or they may even use the L word. A legalist. just ignore the pejoratives and keep on keeping on. We are not to placate or appease the world no matter what they call us. There are too many Christians today with a gray conception of what is good and what is evil. But a Christian is not allowed to be neutral when it comes to right and wrong. See, our postmodern society is trying to make it very difficult to distinguish between the two. Tolerance and inclusivism, those are the virtues. And fundamentalism of any kind is portrayed as a bad thing. You know, that some things are fundamentally right and some things are fundamentally wrong. And so are you going to follow the culture or are you going to follow God? So in this verse, we learn that true agape is it's a pure love without hypocrisy, and it's a godly love. So with that in mind, let's examine the different levels now in the challenge of love. And today, we're just going to start with the easiest level, those with whom we are more comfortable loving, the brethren, verses 10 through 13. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Devoted here, it has the Greek word for family love in it, starge. This is the natural love that you have for your parents or for your children. And then we see the friendship love, the brotherly love. The Greek is actually Philadelphia, where we get our name for the city. From philia, affection, and adelphos, brother. And you may be thinking, I don't even know everyone's name in the church. Well, Jesus, he certainly had different circles. Okay, there were the multitudes, and then there were the 70 that he sent out, and then there were the 12 apostles, and then there were the three, Peter, James, and John. It's okay to have those you're closer to. The idea here is that we really do care for each other. We see and we treat one another as brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles. And see, do you see that person in your row as a brother or as a bother? Now, one obvious thing, this is going to be very difficult to fulfill if we are not around the other people in the church. We're a Christian family. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Next, give preference to one another in honor. This is giving esteem. This is giving respect or honor. And it's whether we think that they deserve it or not. All right? See, love treats people better than they deserve. Yes, they have flaws, okay? And there are valid criticisms. That's true of everyone. This is a choice we make. This is a deliberate attitude. Too often we've got the attitude, well, I'll show them respect when they start showing me respect. And we got a 50-50 rule. But love gives preference to one another in honor. The NIV translates this as honor one another above yourselves. And my footnote, okay, the footnote of my Bible, it says that could actually be translated as outdo one another in showing honor. What if we saw it as a godly competition? I mean, wouldn't that be great? See, my goal is to show you more honor than you show me, or to make sure that you get more honor than I do. This is the opposite, obviously, of the natural human tendency, the natural, the normal mindset of the world. It always wants to elevate self above others. Think of Jesus washing the apostles' feet. Now, this definitely takes humility. See, love is not anxious about the honor and the credit due to self, but it looks for the honor that's due another. Love doesn't jealously seek honor for itself. See, love can applaud others. Love can let others have the spotlight. See, I prefer that you get the honor and not me. Humility. I like the way William Barclay put it. He said, more than half of the trouble that arises in churches concerns rights and privileges and prestige. Someone has not been given his or her place. Someone has been neglected or unthanked. The mark of the truly Christian man has always been humility. Philippians 2:3, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. He then said, not lagging behind in diligence. Now, those who do a lot of things online, you certainly understand that term lagging. All right, you're trying to play a video game, you're trying to stream a movie, and it starts to lagging, okay? It's getting choppy, it freezes, sometimes the wheel starts turning. Well, this word is sometimes translated as sluggish or slothful, you know, using examples from the animal kingdom. On the other hand, okay, this word for diligence here, it has to do with haste or earnestness. This is an urgent love. Love doesn't procrastinate. And love doesn't just expect someone else to do it. Let the preacher do it. Or let brother so-and-so do it. Do we see this love assignment as important, as urgent? Hebrews 13:3, but encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, lest any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. See, as long as it is still called today, we need to do our best not to miss any opportunity to show agape. As it's been asked, you know, why do we often wait till someone dies before we send them flowers? Well, the next one is fervent in spirit. Now, this is something very common in a new Christian. The word here for fervent, from zeo, it means to boil or be hot. And we find it used of Apollos in Acts 18. It says, this man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he was speaking and teaching accurately the things concerning Jesus. And the passage talks about him boldly speaking in the synagogue and refuting those who were saying that Jesus is not the Messiah, and helping the believers. See, are you on fire for the Lord, or is your battle cry, I couldn't care less? Are we eager? Are we ardent? Are we zealous? The little kid's song says, I'm alive, awake, alert, enthusiastic. Schools are always trying to get their students to have more school spirit. And that's why they have cheer, that's why they got pep rallies and so forth. Well, do you have Christian spirit? When we're in the middle of the marathon, you know, our Christian race, and we're exhausted, we can no longer see the beginning, okay, that excitement's gone, and we can't see the end. It's very easy to lose this. Revelation 3. You remember that church at Laodicea was described as being lukewarm. It's not a pretty picture. And so are we enthusiastically showing love to the brethren? Are we really going for it and doing our best? A half-hearted love is not agape. Next, he said, serving the Lord. See, never forget, what you're doing for the body of Christ, you're doing for Christ. Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? He was persecuting the church. Truly, I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even to the least of them, you did it to me. Matthew 25:40. I'm reminded of Colossians 3. Whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord rather than for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. Are you doing it to impress others or to impress the Lord? So don't do it to impress me. Don't do it to impress the person sitting next to you. You know, don't do it to impress your family or anyone else. Never forget, you're doing it for Him. It's all connected to our relationship with the Lord and our desire to please Him. All right, I'm going to keep these next three together. Rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer. Now, he may have been talking about our example. Your example to others, it does matter. People do pay attention. But it's also important to keep in mind that you can't help others very well if you're just a spiritual wreck yourself. And so that could be what he's saying here. This is a joyful love. Are we begrudgingly showing love? It's expected of me to do this. Grumble, grumble. Or are we doing it because we are rejoicing in our salvation and in the hope of heaven. See, hope is about the future. It's not based on what's happening now, but what's coming. And that's why we can rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice, Philippians 4:4. This is a won't quit love, persevering in tribulation. I've discovered that just about everyone shows good character and they're generous and they're nice to be around when they're happy and everything's going well for them. But what about when you've had a bad day? You may be going through just a difficult time in your life. Satan's putting you through the ringer. You're just struggling to get by. It's very easy during those times to become nearsighted and introverted. And you just forget about everyone else. You're focusing on yourself. Or you become hardened and calloused. You just end up a mean old goat, you know, headbutting anyone who gets close to you. But this is a won't quit love. And I think that you'll find that practicing agape can actually help you in your own difficulties. It can be very therapeutic and cathartic. And this is a prayerful love. Are we devoted to prayer? Ephesians chapter 6, after Paul is talking about putting on the full armor of God, well, he went to talk about prayer and praying for one another. With all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit. And with this in view, be on the alert with all perseverance and petition for all the saints, and pray on my behalf, that utterance may be given to me in the opening of my mouth, to make known with boldness the mystery of the gospel. Prayer is so important. In our example to one another and in our praying for one another. It means so much to me when someone says they're praying for me. My mother just texted me a few minutes ago, said, I'm praying for you. It meant a lot. And we can also ask God to help us in our showing love to one another. The next one is contributing to the needs of the saints. Now, the saints is just another term for Christians, you know, those who are sanctified. While the world is focused on getting, Christians are to be focused on giving. Acts 20, verse 35. In everything I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And I've seen it many times in this congregation where you guys are helping each other out with your time and with your abilities and even with your money and with your possessions. You know, so-and-so has got a need, and since, well, I've got two of them, here you go, you can have one. Do we hoard what God has blessed us with, or do we share it? 1 John 3, whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth. It's good to put money in the collection plate. Some of that certainly goes to the needs of the saints. It goes to benevolence. But it's also good to do it on a more personal level. It's good for you, and I believe more needs get met that way. And then the last one that we're going to look at this morning is practicing hospitality. Because of the Romans and their roads, well, first century travel, it was much safer. It was much easier than it had ever been. But of course, you've got, you know, Hiltons and Holiday Inns. They're a long way off. From what I understand, in that day, inns, they're few and far between, known for being pretty shady at times. And so a traveling Christian's got to rely on the local brethren for lodging. So there's a lot of hospitality going on. Now, on top of that, we find passages about the early Christians, like Acts 2:46, day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple, and that's where they were worshiping, and breaking bread from house to house. They were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart. Hospitality is kind of a lost art in this culture, I think, and one that probably needs to be found again. But we're so busy, and we got, you know, we're running around so much that we've got little time for each other. But I think we need to create time. And I think that's why many of us like the holidays. See, during the holidays, we make time to get together with our friends and family and hang out. I think we need to be making more time than just the holidays. So we get so busy, and yes, it can definitely be inconvenient, but we need to follow the words of Peter. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. So I think it's a good idea to have, you know, a different person or family in the congregation over for a meal once in a while. It's very difficult to let someone know you love them if you're never around them. And so if it's been a decade since you've had someone over to your house, then maybe you should think about doing that sometime soon, even if it means you've got to clean your house. It's been said Christianity is the religion of the open hand, the open heart, and the open door. Okay, next week, we are going to look at the more difficult level and then the most difficult level when it comes to agape. So brace yourself. Here's your challenge for this week. Open up to Romans 12 one day and go through each of these character traits, asking God to help you in them. You know, God, please help me to be more devoted to my fellow Christians in brotherly love. Help me to honor them above myself. Help me to be eager and diligent in showing them love, and so forth. Like, you know, that list in 1 Corinthians 13 we went through, there's always room for growth in these things. A major part of Christianity is growth. It's this change from looking like the world to looking like Christ. Not physically, but in our thinking and in our words and our actions. See, again, love is what Christianity is all about. God's love for people, people's love for God, and people's love for people. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples.